Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Coming up, turns out Netflix is not covered under the ADA. Guess what company is teaching other businesses about accessibility? And it wasn't enough for them to take over human jobs. Now, the robots are gunning for your dog. We'll discuss. You decide on episode 227 of the Serotalk Podcast.
Bringing you the best in mainstream and assistive technology developments, news, and analysis. This is the Serotalk Podcast, a service of Serotech Corporation, makers of accessibility anywhere, iBlink Radio, and Remote Incident Manager. Visit us online at www.serotech.com. And now, here's your host, Joe Orozco.
Welcome to Serotalk 227, brought to you by Audible. Audiblepodcast.com/Serotalk is where you can find your free book, and we'll have this episode's recommendation later on in the show. I am Joe.
I'm Katie.
This is Lane.
And we are in spring. It seems last time we recorded, we had still some sleet and snow, but hot temperatures are in. Tourists are definitely in full effect in the nation's capital, so it must really be here. You guys doing okay over there?
I believe it's safe to say that the April showers are here in Ohio today. Spring has sprung indeed. It's a balmy 60-something degrees and rainy.
It's almost summer out here, so I'll take my sunshine in 70.
It's balmy in my office. We can't use fans because Patrick will go ape nuts on us, but it's all right.
Good to know for the heads up in the future.
Well, we do want to point you to a subscription page that will be up by the time this releases, and this is going to be at serotalk.com/subscriptions. We have a number of podcasts out now, as well as an active blog, and we have gotten a complaint or two about people who no longer want to receive all the stuff that we produce, which is fine. You should be able to get only what you want. So visit serotalk.com/subscriptions and subscribe only to the content that you feel like following. With that, let's get into some headlines.
Well, speaking of content you may want to follow, you may want to follow the release of the new Surface 3 tablet from Microsoft. This is an updated model from last year, and we have a link here to a hands-on review. And one of the things the author pointed out that I think a lot of people may find beneficial is this tablet will now be able to run all Windows apps. So no more Windows RT, as well as a faster processor and a lighter weight unit that will be available in May.
All right. Well, since you're taking control of your Serotalk content, you can also now, if you are a Verizon customer, take control of the unique identifier that Verizon had once attached to you to provide marketing, direct marketing content via your location called Super Cookies. The company noted this week that they will now allow customers to completely unsubscribe from the Super Cookie or marketing program.
Well, speaking of privacy, the NCC group has found no backdoors or malicious code behind TrueCrypt, which, as you know, is a popular encryption tool that happens to be recommended by Amazon and is available on OS X, Windows, and Linux. The ongoing security audit is a positive sign for the encryption tool, considering last year an advisory was put out claiming the product could no longer be considered secure. But as your humble correspondent can attest, it is still very much secure and very much awesome.
And again, on the topic of tracking and security, we have more news from Microsoft that they will not enable the Do Not Track default in Project Spartan. They are now saying that it's up to the users to manage their security and privacy preferences.
Well, do you want to just drop into your neighborhood Apple store and pick up the Apple Watch when it releases later this month?
Yes, I do, actually. But I can't, can I?
You can't. They are doing, so you might want to go make that reservation right now to get in and try on an Apple Watch to pre-order online.
Well, you may not be able to walk out with a new Apple Watch, but you will be able to walk out with a new iPhone, potentially. You may now trade in your Android, BlackBerry, or Windows phone handset. The program is available In the US, UK, Canada, France, Germany, and Italy, Tim Cook says the conversion rate has been its highest ever since the launch of iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus.
Now to the Android and Google side, the Gmail interface for Android users will be getting a lift. There will now be a combined inbox view so that all your mail will show up, as well as the ability to attach and view files from Drive and some other features. As this link is in the show notes, this updated Gmail version is not yet available in the Google Play Store, but hopefully it will be out and releasing to folks on Android devices soon.
Over on the Facebook front, have you ever been a victim of Facebook hacking or just wanted to make your data more secure? Well, Facebook now has guides that will describe how to do just that. The Facebook Security Basics page and guides are available.
Well, while Facebook is showing off security, Amazon is showing off its handymen. Amazon Home Services features over 2 million services across 700 professional types, including plumbing, assembly, and music lessons. The program is available across the United States, but is currently heaviest in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Seattle.
While users in those cities are testing out Amazon's handyman service, folks in the city of Atlanta, starting in May, will be able to test Comcast's new speedy 2 gigabit per second broadband service from Comcast. They are releasing this to compete with the folks at Google and hope to provide a much more speedy service to their customers.
Well, one speedy way to take advantage of one's cell phone might be to begin using your eyes to give commands to your phone. Might be a little quicker than reaching out to perform touch gestures on that touchscreen, and Samsung has recently applied for a patent to make that a reality.
Well, move your eyeballs over to this ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court, which says the ADA does not apply to Netflix because it, quote, does not connect to any actual physical place. The case was originally based on video captions. Now, in Massachusetts, the National Association for the Deaf had slightly better results, but the recent ruling goes to show the courts are far from united in believing the ADA can be used to regulate the internet. And that's a wrap on some of your most recent headlines since the last time we got together. Any of these stories resonate with you guys?
I'm really bummed about that Apple Watch, man. I was just going to go walk in, but guess they don't want me to waltz in. I have to make a reservation.
Yeah, kind of an interesting approach, right? Because, well, I mean, they will be on display.
Yeah.
So you can go in there and handle them and see what they're all about.
Right.
You have to make a reservation, though, to just go handle them, too.
That was my understanding.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is
that?
So, no.
Yeah.
You can't walk in.
And the primary reason seems to be that, you know, they're going to start out with a small inventory. So just
surprise,
in case it does
surprise.
Flop, right?
This sounds familiar, Apple. Yes.
And after the initial launch and rush is over, it does sound like they will go back to a standard walk-in, walk-out type of sales approach as well. So I was really surprised about the ADA ruling and not applying to a physical or not applying to Netflix because it does not, you know, connect to a physical location. And wouldn't that basically mean that websites don't have to be accessible then in general? Because they don't technically connect to a physical location. That is definitely going to be something interesting to follow.
What I was curious about is if you're an employee of Netflix and you're in the building, it's probably a dumb question, but I mean, what happens then? You know, like
putting too much thought into this, Joe.
I did. Well, because Section 508, which I mean, totally different legislation, right? But yeah, that thought went nowhere. But ADA, I mean, it's still up for debate because like that court case in Massachusetts did succeed with this whole video caption. And I guess the big thing now is to try to make more content described. Do you guys know where they are in that? I honestly don't know if there's any progress to making
it. It's getting there, yes. More stations are getting more content audio described all the time. And now it's up to the top 64 markets that will be having audio description.
But this is on cable, right? Not Netflix?
Right. Netflix, as of yet, hasn't done anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about Netflix, but I did get a shocker, though. I walked in to play with an Apple TV the other day and found the video description as one of the accessibility options.
It's on the phone, too, on the iPhone, on all the Apple stuff. Very cool.
That's what I get for having a first-generation Apple TV in my house. Don't get access to that.
That's me, too. I'm not that cool. This thing about Samsung, pretty interesting, using your eyes. I mean, one can see a cross-disability use for that, right? Paraplegic or...
I think it can. I also could see where some could be concerned because, again, you know, some phones are kind of going to the hands-free approach, you know, keeping your eyes on the road. And this seems to be, you know, could get some people, I was just looking at my phone. I was trying to do something for 10 seconds.
That's true. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, just to unlock, I don't know. I mean, I'm still on the 4S, like I've said before. So I don't get the cool fingerprint sensor. I don't know, Katie, is that working as well as they say it does? Or is it kind of a gimmick?
It works well. I actually, for me personally, I find that my thumb gets the best results. So that's what I've gotten to use. It can be a bit temperamental, but overall, I am very pleased with it. And I think it's certainly a unique identifying factor for the phone. There are times with the iPhone, however, when you, for example, if you power it off and then power it back on, you do need to enter your password. So there are still times when you need to enter your password, but it's a good alternative.
Just saying, roll your eyes at Siri and your phone unlocks or something to that. Although I guess it's Samsung that's doing it, so it's not.
Yeah, not Siri.
Not Siri, not yet. Very cool. Well, then, let's take a break. On the other side, however, it wasn't enough to target our own jobs. Now robots are gunning for the guide dogs. And touchscreens are so yesterday. We'll find out what might be replacing them on the other side of the break.
Where have you been? You've left me hanging on 3 lunch dates.
Nice to see you, too.
Well, yeah, but question stands. Where have you been?
You miss me that much?
Enough to be curious.
You really want to know?
I do.
I've been trying to get through this semester. But, I just went to the bookstore, got a whole bunch of books, scanned them, and my OCR software, I found out when I ran it this past day, is out of date. Screen reader is out of date. Windows is out of date. Office, I thought I updated. I'm so broke, I can't even, you know, pay attention.
Which is why you've left me in the lunch. Fair enough.
Well, I'm sorry. But I finally decided, you know, I gotta step away from my stuff, because if I don't, I'm gonna go insane.
I think I can help you put some sanity back into your stuff, though.
Promise?
Promise. Have you heard of a company called Saratech?
No, I don't think so. Who are they?
Saratech's a pretty cool company that makes some pretty awesome and economical AT software.
Oh?
Yeah, like their Accessibility Anywhere package comes to mind.
Oh, what's in that?
Well, you've got some scanning software, a screen reader, and a pretty cool little multimedia program called SamNet.
Really?
Yeah.
So, how much are we talking for that?
Well, all that's $21.95 per month or $240 a year.
$21.95 is less than the cost of a movie date these days. wink, nudge, nudge.
See, it's funny you bring up the subject of movies because SamNet has one of the fastest growing collections of described movies and TV programs out there.
Hey, that's cool. So where can I get this?
You can go to saratech.com/accessibilityanywhere, download the trial, and probably get hooked.
I just might, actually. saratech.com/accessibilityanywhere. Okay, I think I can remember that.
Cool.
Hey, are you hungry?
Starving.
Well, you know, since you did just tell me all about Saratech and probably save me a whole bunch of money, I can try your little balanced thing and see if you want to go and get something to eat. I'll treat.
You're on.
Saratech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
From a mono condenser mic on a recorder we got on sale at Radio Shack.
To the power of digital stereo sound. This is the Saratalk Podcast Network.
Well, welcome back, and do check out this Accessibility Anywhere, which covers all your updates and upgrades to software. DocuScan Plus, as you may know, is moving into the third generation, but if you have AA, you do not have to pay for that upgrade. That's the whole point of you having a subscription. So Serotech.com/accessibility anywhere to get your Noku Scan Plus, System Access, and SAMNet.
Well, we want to share with you that it is now time for the ACVO Stokes Rx National Service Animal Eye Exams. Registration for those has begun, started on April 1st, and this year is the 8th year for these. And for those who may not know, these provide free eye exams to those with service animals. And as a person who has a guide dog, I can say from personal experience, the sooner you register, the better, because these appointments do fill up fast. And we also want to thank those at the clinics and everyone who does provide the service for the dogs each year.
So if nothing else, it gets you connected. And it's always good to just find out what's going on with your dog's eyes, whether there's a problem or not. At least in my case, it got me connected with the hospital that ended up treating the disability that my retired guide has. They ended up doing physical therapy. So knowing where to go and who to talk to, that all got started by taking advantage of that free eye exam. But the next time I find out that it's time to retire, one of my guides might be replacing it with a robot on reins. There is an organization working on a robot on reins that is initially designed to assist firefighters going into burning buildings and locating people, or simply just trying to put out the fire and helping them get around. The robots lead in front, and the handler wears a tactile interface on their arm to get information about the size and shape in front of the robot. And it looks like this could have implications to replace guide dogs as well. They're everywhere.
So is this the first time? I feel like we've heard of guide dog robots in the past, and I couldn't remember from where, right? Guess I'm not making crap up.
No, there have been some other efforts with this project.
I don't know. Would you use one? Robopup?
I don't know. I do kind of like having another being with me. I do get the sense that the dog and I, really have that personal bond, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't feel that way with Mr. Robo. But or Miss Robo, but you know, maybe I would. I don't know. I think it is an interesting concept. I mean, especially for, again, you know, maybe people who have allergies to dogs. And so a furry Labrador or Shepherd or Retriever may not work for them. And poodles, some schools have tried poodles. They are just really high maintenance in terms of talk about expenses because of the extra grooming they need. So that's a drawback of poodles, I think.
I don't know. It would be an interesting alternative. It would quickly solve this four-legged scandal, and people, the service dog fakers out there, you know, it would quickly kind of end that discussion and make access issues.
Only if people stopped using dogs, right? Which I don't think
I don't know that would ever go away. I mean, completely.
But for the people who kind of get tired of having that conversation,
right?
That would solve it. There wouldn't be a conversation for those people.
Robot really does guide me. Well, if they do put it out, I hope it like comes with sounds, you know, like it barks and pants and I don't know, does tricks.
As long as it doesn't bark every 5 minutes while I'm trying to sleep in the hotel room, I'm good.
Someone could hack into it and make it bark in the middle of like your presentation.
I would know who to blame.
Well, one place that I'd like to blame for their accessibility is Facebook.
Facebook? No. Don't blame Facebook. They want to show your business how to learn from their accessibility efforts. This article is really neat. Facebook is trying to build an accessibility team within their company. And one of the points that the article talked about was, it was mentioned that without having this accessibility part done in-house, it would be more difficult for Facebook as a whole to really understand the concept of accessibility, because the point was made that accessibility isn't something that's just understood. It kind of has to be, you know, they've done some usability studies and they've really tried to get some good feedback from people with disabilities who use their product internally and externally to really understand how to make it a better platform. And I know as a Facebook user myself, I have seen some improvements. And when things have gone awry, as a couple of updates ago, status messages, at least on the iPhone, were read twice with VoiceOver, and that issue was addressed within a couple of days. So I do think that Facebook really is trying to build a culture of accessibility within their company and trying to spread that message out to more in the mainstream community.
That's a little PR-ish to me. Here's a clip that they've put out.
No one can raise a child alone. So I created a group on Facebook called Jean's Village. My daughter's name is Jean, and I added people to that group who I wanted to invite into our village. I started posting things about my pregnancy. It also developed into a group that I think helped me break down stigma about blindness and about blind people and about disability and the perception of limitations. I ride BART every day. It's the time when I update Facebook. I have a lot of different technologies, a braille display that connects to my smartphone, a smartphone that has a screen reader built into it.
Audience. Location. Album. Text field is editing.
It's remarkable that this powerful platform is available to almost anyone in the world for free. Every day I use Facebook to break down stigma. It's an equalizer because I'm not such an anomaly. I'm just a blind mom.
And so you see, it's not that the story isn't good. A mom uses Facebook to, communicate with her child or whatever. I mean, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate the whole article, actually. It's just that when you go to Facebook and start trying to navigate, and maybe it's me, I will completely accept that it could be a user thing, but I don't see it. I don't see it. It reads really well. I sat back and I'm like, it's kind of rich of Facebook to be talking about this accessibility toolkit when a lot of their stuff doesn't work.
Seems a little premature for them to be trying to teach others. They're definitely behind other social media outlets like Twitter, who has had accessibility options built in for quite a while, and it's more part of the Twitter culture than it is Facebook culture. So I kind of feel like kudos to Facebook for trying and creating the lab. They've created a lab where people, the engineers, can go in and experience what it's like to use Facebook with certain technologies or with certain limitations, and helping the engineers understand that. But I feel like it's a little premature for them to say, yeah, we're the leaders in accessibility, follow us.
I don't think they're trying to be, I wouldn't call them a leader. I just think they're trying to help promote accessibility in the mainstream via their social media. Everyone, Facebook is rather ubiquitous. Everyone is familiar with Facebook. And so I think it's a way for them to show they're trying. And I know they're also working a lot more with people in the disability community to really become aware of the issues.
So the language is right, except me. Clearly, they have not consulted with me. But accessibility as a way of doing things, that's a good thing to say. Mm-hmm. Make it not an afterthought. So the approach is good. And Facebook, as you say, is ubiquitous and they are a leader. Companies could learn. Some of their effort has apparently extended to WhatsApp. So if you use that app, check it out. Maybe it's more accessible now. I don't use it myself, so I can't tell one way or the other, but kudos to them. I sound like a naysayer here, but let's hope they suit some action to these words of optimism.
Well, Facebook has been revolutionizing accessibility from within. There is a company revolutionizing the next generation of tablets. Their Tactus, I think I did said that wrong, has developed a tablet that utilizes liquid to fill different capsules in a touchscreen to make it three-dimensional so that you can physically interact with the screen, bringing accessibility to touchscreens to the next level for sure. How much easier would math have been if my tablet would have been tactile?
Well, Well, I was thinking about maps. I don't know about you guys, but I suck at, I don't know how many of you use Ariadne, however the heck you say it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The tones throw me off, and apparently I can't follow my street. I have a curving street. I don't know. I get lost.
I'm not lost in my neighborhood. No. I tried Ariadne, and I once seeing I GPS came along, which is what I happened to use, I preferred that. I didn't quite get Ariadne.
Does it let you explore like Ariadne?
You can explore directions and things, and there is a map. The map part is more visual, though, I believe.
Okay. So is it Apple Maps that, because there's another app out there that lets you trace your streets and whatnot.
I don't know. I don't do map trace. I don't do maps in general. Too many bad experiences.
Point being, though, that something like this, you know, a reconfigurable surface.
Yes.
Could be awesome for something like that because there isn't a tactile means for idiots like me who can't follow the touchscreen. And another thing is there are structures, temples and, you know, popular landmarks that it'd be kind of neat to be able to feel what they look like. Because you hear about landmarks, I mean, something as simple as like the Washington Monument, for example, you know it's a pyramid, but other stuff like the Eiffel Tower, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but even, I'll be honest, you know, there are some animals that I don't know what they look like, and that makes it sound a little bit special, but...
No, I'm the same way. I mean, people put something in my hand, you know what this is? Well, no, I've never felt this before. I have no idea what you handed me.
Yeah, like some marine animals, you know, like it'd be kind of neat to feel the detail. So I'm excited. I mean, I think it's a pretty cool technology.
Just as an aside, Joe, you mentioned the Washington Monument as an example, but when I was in Washington last year in the Hart Senate building, I believe, or one of the Senate buildings, they have a three-dimensional map of the DC metro area. It's labeled in Braille and extremely tactile. And if you ever have a chance, I would really encourage you to go check it out. I spent about an hour looking at it just because it shows the streets and the different monuments and buildings. It's really cool.
Yeah, see, I thought that was in the Supreme Court, but...
There's one in the Capitol Rotunda, and then another one, the one that I saw was in one of the Senate buildings.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen one of them. I don't remember now which where it was, but...
Very cool stuff.
Yeah, and it's wooden. I mean, it's really nice. So, yeah, I mean,
It is very nice.
If you could, like, tap some keys, you know, and cycle through a bunch of different... things that are of curiosity, but for in my case, for example, sometimes I'll admit, you know, I'm too embarrassed to ask unless I'm around people, you know, I'm like, whatever, you know, but how does this look like, you know, how does this animal, what is the shape of that? So
going back to some more disability related issues, we have an article here entitled 7 Disability Issues You May Not Know About. And this mentions a couple things such as Social Security disability benefits, special education, employment. I personally, looking at it, when I read it, I didn't see anything that surprised me about the article, but I did think it was an interesting perspective and definitely some issues to be aware of within the community and to continue to do our best to advocate for so that employment and special education can continue to improve.
And a lot of our friends and family, coworkers, may not think much of things like the role reversal in the case of Kelly Stapleton recently, who attempted to kill her autistic daughter. And the mother is now in the media portrayed as the victim. And there are many people out there, friends, family, coworkers, neighbors, that may not see a problem with that, who might actually think, you know, her life was really tough, and maybe she really is the victim. These are definitely things to be aware of and to be able to discuss with other people. You know, when I think of particularly recently, there's been a lot of talk about assisted suicide. And there are a lot of people, myself included, who actually think that in certain situations, assisted suicide could definitely be a good thing. However, I could also see how people with disabilities could end up feeling pressured to follow through with an assisted suicide because of the influence of friends and family. So does everybody kind of, initially, I didn't think through the assisted suicide that far. I had just read a story about a woman who was diagnosed with brain cancer and 10 months to live. and she was in a lot of pain, you know? So I was like, gosh, why not move to Oregon where I can die with dignity in that situation?
Well, I think it makes a point that suicide kind of becomes the, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like the automatic out.
The escape hatch.
Right. As opposed to how do we treat them? You know, how do we find, maybe not a cure, because in some cases you can't cure the condition, right? But
alternative rather
than
treatment.
Rather than make this as a, I'm depressed, therefore I will take that road. I mean, it's an interesting article. The one that stuck out for me was actually Social Security. And it stood out for me because, you know, I make no bones. I am conservative Republican. And the fact of the matter is, regardless of where you stand on, you know, political issues, that money is going to run out. And it's going to run out if we don't transfer money from the retirement fund to disability fund. The problem is that you have this catch-22. You know, if you go out and find a job, then you lose benefits. But if you're not making enough money, then you can't really survive. And so it's hard for me, even as a Republican, you know, to sit here and be like, well, you know, deal with it. I don't know. I mean, especially when you start to take into account a blind person who might live in a rural area, for example, and it's hard to get transportation to a job site. And it's easy for us to say, well, we'll move to a metropolitan area. I don't know. I mean, there's just a number of factors that you don't really think about. I don't know. I mean, you hear about it with the consumer groups going to DC, and I don't even know that they bring it up because Social Security is that third rail that no one likes to touch in politics, you know, so no senator, no representative is going to get behind that. Changes to Social Security, I mean.
Yeah, lots of good issues in there, though. Like, very, could be some very hot topics, some very emotional things to think about. And to be able to discuss with others outside of the community who are socially minded but may not have considered all the aspects.
The one that stood out for me was the police one.
Right, yeah.
That one was like, wow, I hadn't really thought about that one.
This is police interacting incorrectly with someone with disability.
With people with disability. Why did the person with Down syndrome not leave the theater? Or why did the deaf person not respond to my command?
Yeah. So definitely a thought provoker. I mean, if we had more time, I wish we could go through all seven of them. We don't have that time, but do check it out. You know, leave some comments because I think this actually came from a mainstream publication, right? I don't know that it...
Yes.
Right. So it's good that someone's covering it. Well, as far as sensitive debates go, how about this old and increasingly popular debate about the obsolescence of Braille? There was a report done, and it's interesting because in the article there is a photo, and the photo's caption says, I mean, it shows Braille, and it says, those raised dots sit at the center of a growing debate in the blind community. And basically this goes back to, is Braille giving way to technology? And the report takes place at this Texas School for the Blind. You know, and the reporter points out that what every student wants is, of course, the iPhone. And here's a brief clip from that.
As she gets older, Demetria's vision is getting worse. And that's heartbreaking because she loves to read. But reading out of the corner of her eye is hard. Small print is really hard.
Why is it we read Braille? To get better. And what's the best way to get better?
To read.
To read, yeah, absolutely good. By the way, I got some new books in, Demetria. Divergent is one of them. Okay, all five volumes.
Kay Pruitt teaches Braille at TSB. Her classroom is piled with thick binders of Braille books and exercises. It's hard to shelve it all. Braille is a lot bulkier than print. The Harry Potter series, 7 books in print, is 56 volumes in Braille.
First way you can read a book that you haven't seen yet.
Open it.
That's the first thing, is to learn to smoothly track the lines of Braille. So we do horizontal lines. We start with the same letter over and over in a row so the line is consistent.
You came in last fall, Demetria, not much Braille, right? Mm-hmm. You knew this stuff, but you weren't really reading it. Yeah. And you can read Braille now. You're reading a book and getting the story. Well, yeah, no, it's not a high school level book, but you're getting there, aren't you?
Yeah.
I take medicine for migraines because I strain my eyes too much, which is another reason why they say I need the braille and to use a cane, but I guess I'm just stubborn. Like, I don't know.
So what do you guys think? I mean, is the fact that we have so much more technology, more speech synthesis, do you think that's going to make braille go away?
I think this goes back to, again, something we've said on, if not this podcast, other podcasts on SPN, that it goes back to personal choice. You know, for some people, I was lucky and blessed to learn braille when I was in kindergarten. And without braille, I would not be where I am today. I would not have had one of the jobs I had where I would not have been able to perform my work duties without braille. And honestly, right now, as we record, I'm looking at my notes on a braille display. And so for me, I don't see braille dying anytime soon. I think there will always be a place in some people's lives who have learned and wish to learn braille.
But do you have that perception because you are a millennial? All three of us here are millennials. And so we kind of grew up with a hybrid of not having a smartphone, right, growing up?
Right. But I do think, I mean, again, I think that, you know, if someone loses their vision later in life, I understand they may not wish to take the time to learn the braille code. I get that and I respect that. But I think from a millennial perspective or a student's perspective, even with the iPhone, there certainly is and could be a case for the use of braille in addition to the supplementary information from the iPhone.
And it all comes down to the person's abilities, the individual's abilities. You know, some people can't learn braille because they don't have the sensitivity in their fingers to feel it, whether, you know, no matter what format it's presented in. So for them, the text to speech and audio from the devices is really the only alternative. Then you have other people who are hard of hearing or deaf as well as visually impaired. And braille really does become a key component to their ability to communicate with the world. So I don't think braille will ever become completely obsolete, but it definitely, you know, we do have more options now for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, more options, but I feel like braille is kind of singular in nature, right? You either use it or you don't, because there is no other reading method. I mean, do you, either of you disagree?
What do you mean? So like if you're a totally blind person, listening isn't a reading method? I mean, it's still taking in information and still...
No, I don't think it's a reading method at all. I don't think that qualifies as being literate.
I would give you
that. When you look at it from a literacy perspective, and there are alternatives, there are raised letters. And is it the most ideal? No, it's not, but it's available.
Well, I will give you the whole thing, you know, about some people not having, you know, the sensitivity in the fingers and whatnot. But for the sake of playing devil's advocate here, there are people who kind of use it as a cop-out. Like, well, it doesn't feel, it's just a bunch of dots. In this clip, and we encourage you to go and listen to the YouTube in its entirety. Actually, it's a podcast. It talks about this 14-year-old student who is straining her eyes, or it doesn't say that it's straining her eyes, but she's looking out of the corner of her eye to read enlarged text. And so I kind of feel like you have to reach a point as an individual, you know, and say, this isn't efficient. You know, like this is abusing what little sight I have left and not taking advantage of a method that could let you be more proficient.
Well, and like I said, it comes back to abilities. It comes back to ability. And again, because I look at it, I've had a couple of consumers tell me I can't, it's just a bunch of dots. Well, it turns out they had sensory processing disorder. So to them, it literally was
a bunch of dots. Right.
So, you know, it comes back to their ability and their level of maturity.
I'm not negating that exists, right? But I'm saying, like, I feel, you know, if we were to do a survey, that yes, you would have your portion of people who genuinely cannot learn braille, but then you would have the people who do not learn it because it's a social stigma. Braille means blind. I self-identify as a blind person.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. And that's drawing unnecessary attention to myself because I'm sitting here reading dots. You know, people are like, wow, you can read braille. And it sounds cool for like 2 seconds. But after that, like, wow, it's because you're blind, right? And for, especially in the low vision category, it's like, no, I am not blind. I am whatever, you know, insert mm-hmm. your politically correct word of the day here. So that's what I'm getting at. But one thing that I did, the NFB used to spout off, you know, like, well, Braille equates to employment. And for the longest time, I didn't buy it. You know, this was back when I was a college student. And now I see the link to it. I don't think that learning Braille will in of itself, you know, lead to you being more employable. But I think it makes your job, or it can make your job, so much easier.
Our Joe's all grown up.
Aww.
I don't know about my maturity level.
But I don't know about that, but well, no.
So interesting stuff, for sure. Send us your comments. Tell us where you stand on the Braille issue. I don't think it's going to be a debate that will die anytime soon. For crying out loud, though, if you do not read Braille, one of the benefits to learning Braille is that your spelling will improve. Oh my goodness. Let me just put that out there. It's a pet peeve of mine.
And those dots are pretty cool feeling, I have to say.
Depending on the display, you know, that could be part of it. Some displays are better than others.
And this is true. But that's a whole other debate.
That's another debate, true. Well, Lane, congratulations on being one of the National Achievement Award winners. How much did you pay them?
Yeah, they paid me, actually. Okay. No.
This program is set up for role models of success and inspiration to students across the country. And this is the 55th annual Achievement Award Gala, which will be held on April 18th here in DC. So that's pretty awesome.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Fantastic. Well, we have a break. When we come back, what do you do when you realize you'll never get your dream job? When we come back on the Sarah Talk Podcast.
Hey guys, this is AZ inviting you to check out the latest addition to the Sarah Talk Podcast Network, The Rundown. Coming to you straight from the sports desk, we're going to cover all the headlines in the sports world. From the MVP chase in the NBA, all the free agent changes in the NFL, and all the drama in the WWE, we got you covered. Join us each and every week for The Rundown here on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network.
Well, welcome back to the Sarah Talk Podcast. And we want to point you over to our recent Sarah Talk Extra, which was recorded with quite the motley crew of characters discussing, among other things, the Apple Watch, whether or not it will fail, which Mike Cavill believes it will. And we also discussed the Internet of Things, the death of the PC or not. So definitely do check that out. And Katie, I believe you have our book recommendation for the episode.
I do. So after you check out that Sarah Talk Extra, why not go and check out a book on Audible called Drowning Ruth? This is a book that I recently read for a book club. It was a well-written book, a novel.
Is that Kristen Hanna?
Yes.
Oh, look at me. I know my chicklet. I don't know if I should be proud of that or not, but there we are.
Yes, that is the book.
I don't know. Would you consider that chicklet? That's not really chicklet,
no,
is it?
No, that's not. I mean,
is it kind of on par with like Jodi Picco?
Not quite. I don't think, because this isn't really as deep as some of her books can get. Okay. Her books are more dealing with, actually, this is Christina Swartz. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's not. Okay. Not okay. Bad.
So Christina Swartz.
Kristen Hanna is pretty cool too. So I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what happens when you're the only guy in a podcast with two women. So get in touch with my feminine side. So what's this about a blind? Oh, actually, before we go, it's audiblepodcast.com/Sarah Talk. You can find that fantastic book, Drowning Ruth.
Well, this week for one of our human interest stories, we bring to you a video about a man named Mark who has the opportunity to fly a plane for the first time. And this was a really interesting clip. It mentions that Mark wears some glasses by a company called eSight, and he has Rod Cohn, I forget the actual name of his eye condition, but it's a degenerative eye condition. But with the glasses on, they enable him to see details that he
wouldn't ordinarily see. And when I first saw this, I thought, oh, it's going to be a big, you know, he's amazing, this blind guy driving the plane. But it was a really neat take. The instructor, you know, said we put the glasses on and, you know, made sure that he was comfortable with the controls. And I was able to give him some slight direction and he was able to pilot the plane and I got to sit back and relax and enjoy the flight. So I thought it was
here's a clip of that video.
So my name's Taylor West. I'm director of outreach at a company called eSight. eSight uses a video camera that captures an image. We take it, run it through a computer, and enhance it in different ways to make it better for someone that's legally blind, and then display it on little screens just on the inside so people can wear it just like normal glasses. We found Mark by actually through BuzzFeed. I saw his video, and he's exactly the kind of person we can often help. So I think it's going to be a great technology for him.
When they asked me what I would do if I could see well, I said I wanted to fly an airplane. Because, of course, car. Like, everyone wants to drive a car who can't drive a car. But I figured this is my one day. So I'm going to skip right over that step and take to the skies.
So it's pretty cool about this guy. He mentions Space Camp, and I think I've mentioned Space Camp here before on the previous episode. He grew up thinking, well, you know, I'm not going to worry too much about not being able to do things like driving. Because by the time I'm 16 and able to drive, we will have figured that out. And kind of like what we talked about in the last episode with Dr. Bell, you know, we haven't found that yet, but eSight seems to be making some waves with these glasses. If you look on their YouTube channel, there's actually multiple examples of people. You have a mom, for example, who's able to see her child for the first time.
And they've really made a splash for sure. They're designed for specific types of vision loss, though. They're designed for those who have experienced vision loss similar to macular degeneration, like this Conrad dystrophy where the central vision goes first. You know, the camera and that's mounted on the glasses and then the image that's basically projected on the inside of the lenses is placed to take full advantage of the clear spaces of vision that these folks do have. So it's working really well for a lot of people. They remind me of the Geordie, if anybody else remembers those.
Clearly you're a party of one there.
No.
And they also, you know, about the same time, the story about the mother in Canada seeing her child for the first time with eSight. There was also a similar story out of Michigan, a young ballet dancer with Leber's congenital amaurosis who was using the Google glasses in a similar fashion to expand his field of view to be able to participate in ballet. So there's a lot of these types of electronic eyewear options out there. Google Glass was definitely a lot less expensive, but since it's been discontinued, it's not necessarily an option any longer.
Do you think I'm trying to find the right way to phrase this question, because I think the technology is awesome for the sake of balanced discussion. However, do you think it sets up false hope, maybe like a too much of an artificial environment?
I thought at first, I'm like, oh gosh, you know, again, what's this going to be about? Is it, you know, going to be, but I think it was made very clear that, or I thought pretty clear anyway, that these glasses do only work with certain visual conditions. And so, you know, someone like me who's a total, obviously that's not going to do me any good wearing these glasses. But I think for someone with certain vision issues, it really could open some doors of opportunity for those people.
Well, we see the same kind of false hope, or if you want to call it that, in all kinds of devices. You know, I have people who swear to me that a CCTV is going to cure all of their problems because they'll be able to read again. And when they get it, they find that the usability is different than it was when they played with it in the store. Or that type of thing. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. I think that there's always some of that.
I'm reminded of this episode in Adventures in Odyssey. I don't know if you guys have ever heard it, but
yes,
in this episode.
I love that show.
On this particular episode, well, if you've never heard it, it's an audio drama for children. It's a Christian thing.
And young adults.
And adults. And I still listen to it. What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm totally coming up on the truth What's that saga? Something? Truth Chronicles? I don't know.
Fantastic.
Look, we must connect about this off air. But yes. In this episode, they have this simulator. They call it the Imagination Station. Mm. And they have this, one of the kids is blind, and another one is crippled. I don't know if there's a politically correct word for that now, but he can't walk. When they go into the simulator, however, they can, or he can walk, he can run, and it turns into this big disaster because he wants to basically live inside this machine, and it doesn't work for the girl. The girl is blind. So that's kind of where I was coming at it. You know, does it create this, obviously this episode is fictitious, but does it develop this dependency on something to see the world around you? Because, you know, he mentions, you know, I can see facial details, and that sounds pretty awesome, not gonna lie. But you see where I'm going with that? Am I the party on one?
No, I think again, though, I wouldn't call it a false hope. I mean, I really think for some people, it's a window of opportunity and experience for them that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Maybe false expectation is a better
term,
terminology than false hope. But instead, I think we get a little bit of that with all the devices out there, though.
Right.
That I think we experience the same thing with the iPhone. How many times do you hear somebody saying, the iPhone, it's going to fix all your problems? And that's different for every person.
Right. I mean, I've noticed it with, you know, even for me with something like the awesome app that is KNFB Reader. I mean, on my phone, it's like, why won't you read this piece of paper? I'm taking the picture, you know, and it's clearly there are so many variables. But again, you think, well, you read everything else so well, you know, why are you not capturing this? So I think we all do this subconsciously in some ways with different aspects of our life.
Well, the article seemed relevant because this guy has a dream job of becoming first a test pilot and later an astronaut and wants to go explore other planets. But then we have articles like this one where it's, you know, when you realize you'll never get your dream job. And this is by Stuart Friedman, who is a professor at Wharton School. And he talks about how he's always had a dream of becoming Bruce Springsteen. And he's always writing about him. He goes to his shows. He teaches his children about the significance of his music. And even goes so far as to be a guest DJ on E Street Radio. But then he writes, I'm not Springsteen and never will be. And that's okay. And he goes on to say, you know, we tell kids anything is possible. And yet part of reaching maturity is about coming to know ourselves, our strengths and limitations. And it's that middle age where you're forced to confront those career aspirations that you may have had. And maybe you long to be a CEO, but you don't have the suitability for a management position. Or maybe you want to start a company, but you're risk averse. Maybe you lack the education, experience, skills, or motivation, quite frankly, to fulfill some of those aspirations you had as a younger person. What do you guys think about this? I mean,
I think for me, it's, I know with my first job out of college, it really did teach me a lot in terms of I was pleased and blessed and fortunate to have the employment opportunity, but I learned really quick. I did not want to sit at a computer and enter data all day. Having that first job, though, and getting that experience and realizing that, oh, this going to work at this particular job for 40 hours a week really isn't quite what I thought it would be. So I think there is some reality check there. And I know when I was little, I used to dream of being a teacher. I used to dream of being a school teacher. And now it's like, no, I don't know that would have best suited my personality. So I think we all have to kind of grow into the people that we are going to become, and that can change throughout life too, which is good. But
yeah, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a lawyer, and I went to a high school magnet program for legal studies. I mean, voted at prom, most likely to become an attorney. disappointed people, clearly. But as I got older, though, I mean, I realized that it wasn't really what I wanted to do. I love to debate, you know, argue with you any day. But there's a difference between doing something because it's a hobby or you enjoy it versus dedicating an entire profession to it. And it wasn't my thing. And every now and then, you know, I'll be watching, you know, The Good Wife or The Practice back when it was on the air, whatever, you know, and like, damn, I wish I'd gone to law school, but it's not. And I guess this is really, the article resonated with me because in my current job, you know, my full-time job, that is, I sometimes wonder if it's fulfilling. And Katie, you know, you and I were talking about this not that long ago, you know, that people wait until they retire to do what they actually want to do.
Right.
And that conversation's kind of stuck around for me because it's true, right? We kind of fall into this, I don't want to call it a rut, right? Because some people are doctors and engineers and all manner of professions and get paid well, but are you happy? You know, is that what you're passionate about? But I also brought up this article because I you know, as it applies to blindness, I sometimes wonder where the link is to what we do, you know, like train in assistive technology, learn this new device. For what though? I mean, what is the end goal? Like, how is this advancing your passion, your ambition, you know, fill in the blank? Do we really think about how we're applying this to making us feel fulfilled? Or is it enough just to learn something and that's fulfilling in of itself? I mean, maybe that's the case. And any thoughts, Elaine?
Everybody's experience is different and their dreams change. And I really don't have a whole lot to add to this conversation, really.
I thought that, I think, Joe, kind of going back to your point about it being fulfilling, and you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, again, for me, for this podcast, while I love technology, obviously, and I love talking about it and showing people different iPhone apps and things, I chose not to go into a technology field because I didn't feel that would be my strength. But as far as, you know, a hobby or something I enjoy doing, I love it. And I, again, as with you in the law school, I kind of wish maybe I should have gone and, you know, done something with computer programming or computers more specifically. But I think whether or not we're blind or have a disability or not, I think this is an article that would resonate with people because I think oftentimes many people in general do jobs, you know, work at jobs because they need to support themselves.
They feel like that's all they can do or that's what's expected.
Right, right.
And something you just said kind of prompted another thought, that being blindness and disability. I used to have a friend who was low vision and she was losing her sight and had a very bitter attitude about blindness because she felt like it was easy for me to say, you can do a lot of things, but... And she was going to education, and I don't know how many of you out there listening are in education or have been through it, but apparently it's very tough to get student, oh gosh, I don't even know what the right terminology is, you know, where you have to go and put in teaching time.
Student teaching.
Student teaching. Hard. See, well, it's not that sophisticated after all. But it's difficult to find those placements because principals and fellow teachers even have a very dim view of what a blind person can do. And so the blind person hopefully will stick it out and, you know, makes a great example. And there are plenty of examples out there of blind teachers. But I sometimes wonder, you know, how many people are doing what they're doing because they felt they couldn't do what they actually wanted to do.
Probably more than we think.
Really interesting statement. It says, find purpose in what you can do. While you are not responsible for all that happens to you, you are responsible for how you react to what happens to you. Stop the blaming and the resentment and assert control over what you can. So, very interesting thought. It's from the Harvard Business Review, which has awesome articles, management, leadership. I'm not a self-helpy guy, but I found this magazine about, I don't know, like 2 years ago. I don't miss an article. I mean, it's a fantastic publication, so...
How do you access that?
HBR.org. They have an RSS feed, which is how I get my stuff from them. But you can also...
I'm going to have to sign up for that.
Yeah, you can subscribe to it. You know, you can pick the topics that you're interested in and lots of awesome stuff.
Do check that out. Do have really great stuff. I follow them on Twitter.
Okay. Oh, see, I need to do that. Well, good deal. Here is the mailbag. I got to tell you, this mailbag sound effect, that zipper, we got to change that because it's a little much. Maybe it's just me. But thank you, mailbag, for making an appearance. It's always fantastic to hear and read the comments that people have brought to us.
It is indeed. And this week we have an email from Juan, and we'll post it in the show notes, but he wants to thank us for all of the good work that we do here on the podcast. And we really appreciate that. He also he commented on the fact that how Audible narrators often portray people with the Hispanic accents. He had some things to say about that as well. And he thinks that the articles are well discussed and talked about. So thank you, Juan, for your positive feedback.
Janine writes back again this week. I always love reading her emails. This week, she writes to share her experiences as a guide dog handler as well as a staff member in the consumer affairs department at one of the guide dog schools. She reminds us to be grateful for the mobility choices that we have in this country and remember that handling a dog is truly a partnership. And if it's not a partnership, you know, then we are blessed to have some choices. She also brought up a great point that we did not discuss in our last episode regarding the fear that some people have about schools taking the animals away, regardless of the school's ownership policy. Made some great points there. And you know, that was something I, as a handler, had not thought about really. And it just so happened about the same time I read Janine's article, I stumbled across a newspaper article out of Pasco, Washington, in which a woman did have her dog taken from her. And in the article, it's reported that there was really not a very good reason. So I could definitely see why people might be fearful of that happening. Take full advantage of, if you're considering a guide dog school, take full advantage of those consumer affairs folks like Janine. They have quite a bit of collective experience. And as graduates, be sure to take advantage of your graduate services. I can't imagine this is a very common occurrence where animals are taken, but you do have options, and the schools can definitely help you out with that. And if you're still curious about this whole guide dog thing, there are a handful of articles available in our show notes as well. I mentioned earlier the four-legged scandal and basically this service dog faker epidemic.
No, service animals in general, right? I mean, there's like people bringing in snakes.
Yeah, emotional support. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And it's ridiculous. And that's,
you know, sorry, guys.
Yeah, and it's this important. It is important to remember.
Snake.
Marcus would be offended. Marcus happens to be sitting next to me, actually. My husband's ball python.
My apologies,
who is
Marcus.
Not a service snake.
But could be if you needed one.
Yes, you just have to go online and register him.
Not in Idaho, though. That is one thing to remember. Keep track of your state's laws because the law that will be applicable is the one that gives you the most protection. And so in Idaho, it is restricted for me. It's restricted to dogs and miniature ponies, if I were ever so inclined.
Dude, would you ever get a pony? Either
no.
Of
no.
No.
Really?
No.
I couldn't do it. They live like 50 years.
Yeah, but they have to have a partner.
I've seen one.
You've seen
yes,
one?
Yes, and I've seen one. And for me, one of the things that they don't have a relieving schedule. So
they have to wear diapers.
Yes. And just their food. I mean, they have to eat, you know.
They eat like a horse. You know. Wah, wah.
They do eat like a horse. That just wouldn't work for me. No, thank you.
So five reasons why a guide horse would be terrible.
Yes.
There you go. Joe's
next blog.
Blog
post, Joe.
If we're not the only ones who need to be aware of the laws and how they apply, business owners should also be aware as pointed out in an article out of Northern Idaho, actually, where a physically impaired woman was denied service at a yogurt shop because they did not think she had a disability, that whole invisible disability thing. You know, and she was perceived as one of those fakers because the business owners were not aware of the rights and responsibilities and all that jazz.
Lane actually wrote a blog post, which is also included there, alongside Janine's comment about her experience or what you realized from your partnership with your guide dog.
Yes.
Very cool post. Check that out.
And we have an email from Brad, who states that he liked reading Joe's article and also enjoyed the discussion that we had about it on our last episode, and also the discussion about the restoring sight conversation that we had in the last episode. And thank you again, Brad, for your feedback, and we'll post your email in the show notes as well so folks can read that too.
Yeah, Brad's an awesome writer. You should read his comment. It's actually pretty...
I always appreciate it. I always get a good laugh.
It was very well written.
And his most recent entrepreneurial, which by the time you listen to this, it will no longer be the latest one. He will have added a new one, but click on his other stuff written by Brad. It's fantastic. So thank you, Brad, for listening. We do have a final comment, actually, from Mike Arrigo in response to our Cerro Talk Extra. And since we don't cover comments there, we will cover it here. And he says he is not getting the Apple Watch. He never gets the first version of anything. And quite frankly, he's not sure what the watch will do that his phone cannot. He agrees with some of the things that Mike Calvo says on that episode about iOS 8 and also points to some inconsistencies in accessibility between OS X 10.9 and 10.1. And finishes by pointing out that Steve Jobs would have never tolerated this. No. Do you guys think that accessibility would have been at the same level if Steve was still around?
I think that it's just time to
let it go.
Let that go. I mean, Steve, rest in peace. He's no longer with us. And so we're moving on to Tim Cook. And I think Tim does get accessibility. I mean, I know people that work at Apple, and I know that they are still very much committed to accessibility, and they're Not long ago, they posted positions for accessibility analysts. So they really are trying to increase their accessibility department and get more folks that use the accessible technology into Apple. And I happen to agree with some of Mike Arrigo's points that I did not buy the first iPhone when it came out, because in 2008 or 9, when the first voiceover accessible iPhone came out, it was only on AT&T, and I chose to wait until it became available on Verizon, and I purchased my 4S and haven't looked back since. But as far as the Apple Watch, I'm honestly more intrigued. I likely won't buy one, but I do want to get my hands on one and see what it can do and just see the form factor of it. I just really kind of want to get a picture of that in my mind. And
make a reservation and get your hands
on it.
And it has been confirmed that it will have voiceover. That I brought up in a previous episode, a 9 to 5 Mac article that said that it would have voiceover. I have seen that confirmed in a couple of other places this week. And if you want to know more about my thoughts, check out that extra.
Well, very cool. It'll be interesting to see how Apple evolves. Yeah, I'm not getting the Apple Watch. I couldn't use it most of the time. I couldn't bring it into work, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it'd be interesting, though, if they open it so that you can use it with more than just iDevices. I think if they do that, I think it could,
why wouldn't it? With things on the iPhone, like HomeKit, HealthKit, whatever, right. I mean, I would think the watch would be fine. You know, how cool would it be to, you know, just tap your watch and, you know, turn my heat on or something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I think it'll get there.
Well, but, you know, Apple has this persistent ecosystem. Like, they don't feel like they need to play. I mean, HomeKit is a good example of how that's not the case, I guess. But, you know, they're still ballsy enough to say, you know what, this is our playground, and you're either in it or you're not.
And I'm in it. I am an Apple fangirl. I'll admit it. I'm, you know, Apple TV, Mac, which I'm currently running Windows on, but I have an iPhone. And I think, you know, again, this goes back to whatever works best for folks. And I'm personally glad I made the switch from Windows to the Mac. And I do like using the Mac option. I'm glad I know both operating systems, but I commend Apple in terms of principle. You know, if I can go into a store and pick up a device and it's going to talk to me right out of the box, for me personally, that says a whole heck of a lot about a company. So
you know why that's the case, though? No, really. It's because what? Facebook has taught them how to be accessible.
Right. Of course. Of course.
They have read those guides.
Yes.
So kudos to Apple and everyone else in Silicon Valley. Well, that's going to do it for us. Lane, Katie, always a pleasure.
Indeed.
I'm hungry.
It's a good thing we're at the end of this road. If you want to take part in the conversation, do send us your comments. We always love hearing from you guys. Email us resources@serotalk.com, tweet us at serotalk, or use that handy iBlinker radio app to send us an iReport, which if you haven't downloaded iBlink Radio, we had mentioned it so much. I'm listening to a movie right now, actually. It's Case 39. It's a horror flick, which you too could listen to if you had SAMNet or accessibility anywhere. In any case, the Serotalk podcast is a production of the Serotech Corporation. I want to thank Audible again for their sponsorship of the network. The audio engineer behind today's episode was Patrick Perdue, and I am Joe Roscom. We will do this next time on the Serotalk podcast. Thank you for listening.